So it's time to introduce our big speaker tonight. I've heard a lot of good things about him. It's Johnny H. from Long Beach.
Hi, everybody. My name is Johnny Harris, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to see all you here. I really was amazed by all the people who got in that line for the desire chip. And I was really amazed by all the people who stood up as newcomers. God, they're... I have an affinity of people walking up behind me handling electronic things. You've had as many shock treatments as I've had. You'd be nervous about that kind of stuff, too. I ain't just going to sneak up on you and say, we're going to help you, boy. And there is a lot of new people here. There's a lot of people who got up here to get the desire chips. And I tell you that I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be sober. And I hope the word sobriety does not offend you the way it offended me when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and sat in my meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in my early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you talked to me about being sober, I didn't think you had anything to offer me. I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. Just as physically sober. And that seemed to be the problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I was thinking about delivering a series of hard-hitting talks about the evils of alcohol. But I can't say anything evil about alcohol. Because for a long, long time, alcohol was the best friend I'd ever known. You see, alcohol is the thing that saved my life. And when I came to you and said in Alcoholics Anonymous, sober the way I was, and you said that we have sobriety here in a way of life, I didn't think you had anything to offer me because people had been telling me about that all my life. You see, when I was sober, that's when the nightmare started. When I was sober, that's when I was faced with that long arm of remorse and guilt that went down inside of me and strangled me half to death. When I was sober, I didn't want to be sober. And I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it today. I was sitting there and I was thinking about being sober. And it's funny how I spent the biggest part of my life, or practically my entire life before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to keep from being sober. And now, for over 27 and a half years of my life, it's been the most priceless commodity that I could possibly incorporate in my life, is being sober. So if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I hope the word sobriety doesn't offend you, and I hope you stick around Alcoholics Anonymous long enough to find out that when we talk about sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, we talk about a whole new thing of what society seems to think sobriety is. You see, I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. And I tell you that because a little over 29 and a half years ago, I crawled around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary. And because of a loving God has expressed himself through a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I get nothing else out of this deal, I guess I can live with that for the rest of my life. It makes me feel good. I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you that that's where alcohol and drugs took me to. I'd like to be able to tell you that. But that's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs did in my life, they kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here without alcohol working in my life, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've always been some type of emotional misfit. It seems like to me, in my entire lifetime, I've always been looking for something. I didn't know what it was. I believe when I was crawling around in that cell in solitary confinement 29 and a half years ago, I believe I was looking for something. I didn't know what it was I was looking for, but I knew it was something that I didn't have. See, I've always known that. I've always known as far back as I could ever possibly comprehend or remember that there was something wrong with me, I didn't know what it was. I had thoughts that I wasn't supposed to have. I thought about things I wasn't supposed to have. I had anger and hostility inside of me that I knew I wasn't supposed to have. I don't even know where it came from. I just had it. And I didn't know what to do about it. It was just, I just wandered around just full of anger and hostility all the time, just hateful of everything. And I didn't understand that. I didn't know where it came from. And I knew that was wrong. Nobody had to say it's wrong. You're not supposed to hate your mother. But I did. And I knew it was wrong. Nobody said so, but I knew it was wrong. And I had an excuse on why I did it. You know, excuses and blame and pointing the finger at their fault is a great anesthetic to soothe the madness of your own hostility. And I had a great excuse for why I did. Everybody in my family were drunks. My mother was a drunk. My father was a drunk. I had 4 drunken uncles, 3 drunken aunts, and a drunken grandfather. No wonder I felt different. I thought I'd been born beneath my station or something. I didn't know what that was. But what was wrong with me was these people confused me. Everybody confused me before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody who I ever sit down and talk to confused me. They talked about things I didn't understand about. I lived with these people and these uncles of mine. They used to gather up at my grandparents' houses on the weekend and beat each other half to death. They stole each other's whiskey and each other's women, and they just, I don't know, I guess whoever stood up at the end of Saturday night was a champion or something. I don't know how they figured that deal out, but that's what they were, and these guys were supposed to be my role models. But what confused me about these guys was that they'd do all this on Saturday and Sunday. They'd beat each other half to death and steal each other's women. Then on Wednesday, they'd sit around and they put their arms around one another and said, "We love one another because we're family." And I guess, I don't know, way back there somewhere, I don't know where it was. I guess way back there, I got the idea in my head, if that's what love is, keep it. If that's how deceitful and two-faced and lying it is, I don't want any part of it. And so until the day I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I never one time in my entire lifetime ever remember uttering the word love. It just was not in my vocabulary. I've come to understand why, because I always thought to say that you love somebody, you give them an edge on you, some type of a weakness that you throw out there. You see, and I spent my entire lifetime not to show any weakness. I didn't want to show any weakness, and how weak can you get? I just didn't understand what was going on. These role model uncles of mine, they smuggled, sold whiskey into whorehouses, and made whiskey and sold it into whorehouses and went to penitentiaries. And I took a look at them and said, I'm going to be different. And I was. I smuggled dope, sold it into whorehouses, went to penitentiaries. But I was different. I was different. I just different. Always different. Always different. Always just different. I was just always different. No matter where I was different. I just didn't belong there. And if you don't belong into some of the places I go to, you got to try harder. And so I started looking for a way out of this thing a long time ago. And wherever I went, I was confused. I went to church with my grandmother, and that confused me sitting in church. Because I left these people that I felt different and strange and irritable around, and went on the other side of town and I sat down with another group of people and felt different and strange, irritable, and hated all them. And I never figured on a very simple thing. Wherever I went, I went. Isn't that heavy? I mean, Jesus, you can just put that in a psychological book and get yourself $45. So wherever I went, I took that rotten attitude of mine with me. Wherever I took that hostile and arrogance and whatever it was that I had embedded way down inside of me, I took it with me. And I sit in a church a long, long time ago with that kind of a feeling inside of me, that bitterness and that hatefulness around these people that I didn't even know. And I waited for this man in his long, flowing robes to stand there with his air of authority and tell me what was the matter with me. And he told me I was supposed to love and honor and respect my parents. He said, you're supposed to love your brothers and your sisters, and I didn't. I hated them. I hated them for a reason I didn't even understand. I felt very guilty about that. I became frightened to death sitting in that church a long, long time ago. That people were going to find out I was hating when I was supposed to be loving, and I didn't know what to do about that either. I guess I spent the next 20-some years of my life trying to masquerade from the world what really went on in here. And the way I started to masquerade, I started to build images up around about myself of what I thought you wanted me to be. Wherever I was just whatever I thought you wanted me to be. That's what I did. I've been one of those guys who spent 20 years of his life looking for lower companions. And I never found any. By the time I got there, I was always less than. I didn't understand what was going on. And I said I was never going to drink alcohol. I said that as far back as I can remember. I lived in a house where two drunks worked. They scream and yell and hit each other and cuss and do all the things that they do in drunken houses. And every once in a while, the old man come got me and started kicking me around. He didn't do it to my brothers. He did it to me. I remember laying there in the middle of the night when they're gone, which is the most terrible time. And they're out there, and they're going to come in, and I know they're going to come in, and I know they're going to get me. So I lay there and think about my uncles who live in penitentiaries and my aunts who work in those houses on the other side of the tracks. I think about my old man who beats up my mother who beats up my old man. And it dawned upon me one time way back there what the problem was. It was alcohol. They drank, and they did those things, those people. I'm not going to drink because I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to be better than they are. I'm going to step out into that world. I'm going to have something. I'm going to do something, and I'm going to be something. But I did take a drink. I couldn't be an alcoholic if I hadn't drank alcohol. I want you to know I figured that one out all by myself. I just don't want to drop anything too heavy on you, but every once in a while I just have spiritual experiences. It just kind of gives you goosebumps when you find out stuff like that. You think you know so much, and all of a sudden you find out. But what happened to me when I took a drink of alcohol is I enslaved myself. I put myself into slavery. I sold myself into bondage from my first drink of alcohol. Not to alcohol. Not later on to pills and to marijuana and later on into heroin. No, I didn't sell my bondage into that stuff. No. I sold myself into bondage for the feeling I got when I drank alcohol. That feeling, that thing that went down inside of me and tore all that madness from me. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and stood me into the gray fringe of the business of living and installed in me some type of arrogance that said, damn you world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what happened to me when I drank. And I became willing to pay any price that there was to pay. Do anything that there was to do, go anywhere there was to go to get that feeling. I spent the next 20-some years of my life pursuing that feeling with two thoughts in my head. Get loaded or get the money to get loaded on. Heaven help you or anybody else that got between me and those two thoughts. And what happened to me when I drank happened to me every time I drank. I took a drink of alcohol and 3 days later they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. Travel around out there from reform school to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Somewhere sitting on a furlough from a reform school in the lottery of life, in my life, alcohol quit working. I don't know where. 10, 11 years old, alcohol quit working in my life. And a guy come along and tapped me on the shoulder and said, why don't you try these? And he gave me some pills. I thought about that incident many times in my life. I thought about that. And, you know, I don't one time ever remember saying to that guy, what are those? Will they hurt me? I just, well, thank God they weren't X-Lax. I'd be an alcoholic and an X-Lax addict or something. It worked. It gave me that almost feeling again. You know that feeling of almost? I mean, few of you know about that almost, but not quite. You get gone before you get quite there. You know, you're gone somewhere. I almost had it. What was it? I don't know, but I almost had it there once. What was it? Well, you know what it was. I almost had it. You know what I mean? Nobody ever knows what it is, but it's almost there. You know what I mean?
That's how confusing I got. I just almost had it, and I didn't know what it was, but I almost had it a couple times. Sitting on a furlough from a reformed school in the lottery of life one day, alcohol and pills quit working in my life, and a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and went in and out of institutions. That's what I did. Just running around out there trying to make it work. See, one of the great lotteries of life in my mind, when everything in my life quit working, in the back of my mind there was an idea. It worked once, it has to work again. It has to. It's the only thing that had ever worked in my life, it has to work again. And when I run out of one thing that didn't work, something else almost worked. And you know, as I look back on it now, you know, I never did, ever in my lifetime, ever get that feeling I got when I took that first jar of alcohol back there a long, long time ago. I never did get that feeling ever again. Oh, it came close a couple times, but it's such an elusive thing. Alcohol and drugs are such an elusive, lying things. They promise you. They just almost dangle a little carrot out there for you, you know, and let you nibble. That's the kind of way they work. You know, they just reach down in there and just take everything out of inside of you, God. And it lies. And the longer you go, and the more it takes, the less it happens. And the more it takes, the more confusing and the more desperate I became, because it kept taking more and more and more to do less and less and less. And the more less it started to do, the more I tried, the more desperate I became. In 1951, I was riding the crest in 1949-50. I was riding the crest of what I thought was a crest. I had it all, I guess. Had a big apartment building and a closet full of $300 suits and a big automobile, and people were begging a big man for favors from time to time, and no big man gave him a favor every once in a while. But I couldn't leave the apartment, because every time I did, the police jumped on me and took me to jail. But I used to lay up there in my big new suits and get out and drive around in my big automobile at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon when the fools are coming home from work. And I'd drive up alongside of one of them lames in his pickup truck, and I'd say to myself, I wonder why I can't be like him. Wonder why I can't be like my brother. Wonder why I can't just go to work and have a wife and a couple of kids like everybody else. Good God, what's the matter with me? I didn't know. I didn't have the slightest idea what was wrong with me. And that's where I was. I stood in the old Los Angeles County Jail shortly thereafter in 1951. Why, my mother stood at the visiting screen and screamed at me through the visiting screen that I was a murderer. It seemed that my 17-year-old brother had gotten into some of my poison and took an overdose of it and died. I didn't know how to handle that. I went back and sat up on my bunk and knew I was supposed to be doing something, but I didn't know what it was I was supposed to be doing. I want you to understand something. If I was capable of caring about anything in my life prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, if I was, and I don't really know whether I was or not, because people like me don't care about anything but themselves. If I was capable of caring about anything in my life prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, it was my baby brother, if I was capable of it. And I stood out underneath a tree, handcuffed between two detectives 3 days later while they put him in the ground, with all the guilt and shame and humiliation and degradation of a lifetime hanging around my shoulders. And I would have liked to have been able to cry. I would have liked to have been able to break down and show some type of emotion. But you see, I'm standing there with a bunch of guys from my neighborhood all around there at the funeral. And I'm not going to show them that I'm weak. I'm going to keep that facade, that macho nonsense hanging up around me for as long as I can get up there. And die a little inside every time I got to front it off someplace. I'm dying, but I'm going to front it off. I went on to the penitentiary. I stayed 4.5 years in the penitentiary. Came out of there 4.5 years sicker than I was when I went in there. Spent the next couple of years of my life trying to prove what a psychiatrist in San Quentin told me wasn't true. He said, Johnny, people like you don't change. He says, you're doomed to die in an institution. He took me down and showed me a little green room. He says, you're going to end up here, hotshot. Told him, not me. I'm different. I come walking out of that institution bound determined I had that deal beaten. 6 months later, I'm laying in a nut house kicking and screaming. And that's when I made my round to some of the better laughing academies in the country, interviewing psychiatrists. I used to sit there with my wraparound overcoat and talk to them. They'd talk to me about my mother, and I'd talk to them about their mother. And that's when they introduced me to better living through electricity. They didn't tell me I was an alcoholic. They told me I had a bad attitude. Let me tell you something. If they jolted you on Saturday night, on Saturday morning without electricity, and you come to 3 days later and didn't know who you were, you'd have a bad attitude too. I remember Saturday night. This reminds me of, sometimes when I go to meetings on Saturday night, it reminds me of the Nut House on Saturday nights. And I mean, I sit in meetings, look at them, you don't look much different than them. I mean, some of you even have armbands on. I mean, just... But we used to get treated for our disease on Saturdays. That's when they used to shock me senseless until Tuesday. And we have dances on Saturday night. We'd have coeducational dances in the Nut House on Saturday night. And I'd be standing over there in the corner, you know, drooling out of my mouth, and she'd come shuffling over. And it's our big shot, you know, and she'd say, "Oh," and I'd say, "Mm-hmm." She'd say, "My name is," and I'd say, "Mine." She'd say, "What's your name?" And I'd say, "I don't know. You read this little thing here." And that's... I wouldn't want you to be disturbed with your job by listening to an AA talk, for God's sake. Just think, I had to give all that up just to come to an AA meeting in San Jose tonight. I had to give up being shocked senseless by a bunch of technicians who thought it was funny to see me jump when they hit me with those electrodes. And you see, they didn't know, like I didn't know, why they were doing it. A little over 29 and a half years ago, they laid me down on the bed near Los Angeles County Jail to die. I weighed 128 pounds and I was yellow. And there was a doctor standing at the foot of my bed telling me I was going to die. His words were this: "Son, you're going to die. Nothing we can do for you." I'd had 2 years of doing exactly what I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it. That's what I had. And that's what it took me to. That's what I did to me. When I have got everything that I want, doing everything that I want to do, when I got it all and I'm doing it whenever I want to do it all day long for 2 solid years, I ended up 128 pounds the color of that man's shirt strapped down on the bed in the Los Angeles County Jail dying. I laid there for 3 days and 3 nights. He kept coming in every morning saying the same thing to me: "Son, you're going to die. Nothing we can do for you." And I wanted to die. I wanted out of it. I wanted out. What dawned on me, and the terror that gripped me in the third day, came back that I wasn't going to die. I was going to get up out of that bed and go to the penitentiary and come back out and start that rat race all over again. I didn't want to do that anymore. I was tired of doing things like that. I didn't want to do it no more. Drugs aren't working anymore. Alcohol's not working anymore. Nothing's working anymore, and I can't die. I want out of it. I laid in that bed for 18 days and 18 nights. I didn't need sleep, drink, or do anything. I just laid there. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." I thought for a long, long time nothing had happened, because there were no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an AA meeting down there." I didn't jump out through the tulips, you know. Nothing like that's ever happened to me. I just went to sleep for a little while. I don't know how many have ever kicked a 2-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I've been asleep in a long, long time. I tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks after I screamed out that prayer in my deathbed, I'm up running around the jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back on the bed I just gotten off of. And the reason I'm doing that, because in the back of my mind, when the guilt and the remorse and the pain is so unbearable, I used to put something in here or in here, and the pain subsided for just a period of time. That's what used to happen. That was in the back of my mind. And even though it had quit working, I knew that it had worked once. It has to work again. It has to. I stood in front of a Superior Court judge and was humiliated. I was called a blood-sucking parasite in society. I was told that I wasn't fit to be around decent people. There was a woman sitting in the courtroom that day who was pregnant with my child, and he told her that if she cared anything about that child, that she'd get so far away from me that I'd never be allowed to lay eyes on it. And you know, he didn't say anything I didn't know. That's the first time I'd ever heard those words, but I always knew what I was. always knew what I was. See, I've always known it. I've always known what I was in here. I, no matter what I put up here, no matter how many masquerades or how many images or how many facades I put up, whether it was convict or dope fiend or whatever it was I put up around me, no matter what it was I put up around me, I always knew what was in here. I always laid down in the bed at night. I always looked in the mirror. I always saw what was in there. And when he said it, it literally drove me to my knees, because I'm so self-centered. I think that everybody in the world is tuned into his statement. And so I went up there and spent 9.5 months crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement, frightened to death. And on the first Sunday in November 1959, I wandered into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't take any credit for coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, nor do I take any credit for staying here from that day to this day. If I'd have known where I was coming, I wouldn't even have come. I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. The reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was because the institution I was in allowed women to come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 27 and a half years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. I tell you how strange that is. I tell you how really strange that is. I sit up here with this cute little girl as the secretary of your meeting, and when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't any cute little young girls in Alcoholics Anonymous. There were these elderly ladies. And they got up to talk, and they said they drank a long time. You could look at them and see they'd been somewhere for a long time, I tell you. I mean, they didn't even know how to put their makeup on right. You know, I mean, you know how you are when you're new. You find everything wrong. You know, everything is wrong. And I took a look at them. But there was something about them. I didn't have the slightest idea what it was. There was just something strange and mystifying about these people who took time out of their busy lives to give of themselves on a Sunday just for the hell of doing it. They drove 185 miles over back roads to come up and spend 2 hours in the penitentiary with a bunch of convicts who didn't want to be there. It was amazing. And they had that look that only comes from people who are actively engaged in trying to give the program of Alcoholics Anonymous away for free and for fun. It doesn't come for the socialites who show up once in a while and drop their dollar in the basket. It just comes from the people who are busy about the business of living in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the only place I've ever found it. These people talked about God that day, and when you talked to me about God when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I left because God was the reason I was. It wasn't my fault. You see, when you run out of everything to blame, do you hear that? I never know. One time I heard a phone ringing and nobody else did. At least they said they didn't. By the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you see, I had run out of people, places, things, circumstances, and conditions to blame for my dilemma. I couldn't blame society or the penal system or the courts or my people or anybody anymore. I only had me. And I couldn't shoulder that type of responsibility. I couldn't shoulder that type of thing for what I turned myself into, so I had to blame somebody. So I blamed God for it. The thing that kept me from blowing my brains out before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was my ability to blame somebody other than me for my own dilemma. And you can hear that all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous if you listen. Listen sometimes to him. I guess if God wants me to have a job, he'll shoot it down here to the club. Next time you get hungry, you go lock yourself up in a closet and pray for a hot dog. If God squirts you one through the keyhole, you call me. I'll be on the next plane north. I've been looking for a deal like that all my life. I'll tell you what I've learned about God in my years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is my some knowledge of the whole thing. I know one thing as I stand here before you tonight, that God won't do anything for me that I can do for myself. Nothing. And he won't do anything for you that you can do for yourself either. And the reason I know that, there's only been one thing in my entire life I've never been able to do. I wasn't able to do it before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't been able to do it for the 27 years and some odd months I've been here. I won't be able to do it from this night until the night they plant me in the face with a scoop. I've never been able to do it of myself and by myself. I cannot keep from taking a drink. I can't do that. Now, for over 27 years and 8 months of my life, I haven't taken a drink or a mood-altering chemical. I haven't smoked any grass, stuck any needles in my arm. I haven't even taken an aspirin. And what's even more fascinating than that to me is I haven't had a conscious thought or a conscious desire to take any of them since the first time I laid my eyes on you to this very instant. You see, I can't do that. I just can't do that. So God must be doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And that's the only thing I can't do. It's the only thing in my life I've never been able to do. I've always been able to make money. I've always been able to work and make money. That's easy to do. I've always been able to get myself in and out of jackpots. More in than out sometimes, but being locked up was no problem. I had a good lawyer going for me. He was called Night and Day. Kept putting them Night and Days in there. Sooner or later, they opened the door and let me out of there. I didn't know that. I came back to your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for the same reason I came to San Jose tonight. I came here to see his people. And I kept coming back to your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you kept confusing me as much as anybody had ever confused me. I was really confused when I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I really wanted to be here. I really wanted to see that. I really wanted this thing to work. I used to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd say to myself, God, I wish I was an alcoholic. Man, if I was just an alcoholic. And then I'd hear you say things like, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore, and everything is wonderful. And I'd say, then I know I'm not an alcoholic then because I'm not drinking and I'm crazy. I didn't know what was going on here. I'd hear people say things like, you got to get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I got up and ran around and picked up ashtrays and smiled at people. I then went back over and sat in the corner back there and died. And I'd say to myself, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. If I was an alcoholic, all I would have to do is not drink and pick up these ashtrays, and I'd be wonderful. I'd be like them wonderful people there who are. I didn't know. That's how confused I was. But I had a deal going for me. I had a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started to get into the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to become involved in a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a tough time with a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't admit that I was an alcoholic. I couldn't get the word out of my mouth. And somewhere sitting in a room taking my fifth step, I heard myself admit to a man that I was an alcoholic. That just came out of me. It came from way down deep inside of me. It just came out of me. And with it came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. You see, I know what's wrong with me today. I know what's wrong with me. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. It has symptoms. I didn't know that. You see, I've always been restless and irritable and discontent. All my life I was restless and irritable and discontent. And I got a few little peace and ease with taking a few drinks. And later on, a couple of joints and three or four pills and a little shot of heroin. A little peace and ease. But when I was sober, I was restless and irritable and I was discontent. I didn't know that was symptoms of my illness. I didn't know that at all. I found that out when I found out I was an alcoholic and I suffered from a disease called alcoholism. I also found out in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous that there is a solution. There's a chapter entitled, There Is a Solution. And you know what that chapter says? It says that people like me, can learn to live at peace in the world. And to learn to live with some peace and contentment in this world. Isn't that amazing? And I want to tell you something. That is a true statement. Because I have learned to live in some peacefulness, in some joyfulness, and some happiness in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't do it right away. I'm not a rocket to stardom. I had a lot of trouble when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. That was a long construction period after I got here. But people of Alcoholics Anonymous helped me. By their example, they sent me down in rooms and told me things like cussing was a crutch for conversational cripples. Because my vocabulary consisted of 4 four-letter words, that's all. Mother ran around in there somewhere. But they didn't laugh and tee-hee and think it was cute when I used one of those off-color 4-letter words. They said, "We don't say it that way, Johnny. We say it like this." And then they stood my wrath when they corrected me. It takes a lot of love to correct somebody. It didn't take any love to overlook and make allowances. It didn't take any love at all. The only reason that I would overlook and make an allowance for one of your shortcomings is if I'd want you to overlook and make allowances for my shortcomings. That's all. Come see, come sigh. Trade off a little bit. That's the deal. But what if I'm going to live in such a way that I am not going to want you to overlook my shortcomings? And I am going to want you to correct me when I make a boo-boo. What if I'm going to live in that type of an environment with that type of people? Then I'll be willing to, or be willing to go out on a limb and try to correct you. And that's the way these people were with me. They corrected me. And so what happened 26 years ago on the 4th of June, 1961, they opened up the doors of the penitentiary and let me out of there. I went out to a world I didn't know anything about. I still don't know anything about it. Do you know that I've been out there running around in a world I don't know anything about, doing things I don't know how to do for 26 years? And nobody's locked me up? You talk about somebody being a stranger in paradise, baby. I'll tell you, I don't know how to do nothing out there. I really don't. I don't know what they're supposed to do. I remember I got out there and my mother fell off the steps blind drunk to welcome me home. I picked her up and put her on a couch, said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you my mother's sober, but she's not. She's drinking. My mother never stayed sober. My mother gets sober and gets drunk and gets sober and gets drunk. But I've learned a very valuable lesson from my mother. I've learned I don't have the power to get anybody sober. I have the power to get them drunk either. I don't even have any power to keep me sober. Where would I get any power? I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous with any power, and I haven't accumulated any power since I got here. I'm given a daily reprieve from this killer illness of mine, contingent upon my maintenance of certain spiritual conditions today. Not yesterday, not what I've done for the last 27 years of my life, but for what I'm doing today, right now. That's what mine's based on. I get to stay sober all day based on what I do today, not by what I did yesterday or last week or the week before last. Just what I did today. If I'm given a daily reprieve, all I get is today. And I jolly well damn take care of what's going on today. You know what my biggest thing is that I have to guard against? Complacency. I have to guard against taking this thing for granted. I really do. I really got to do it. You know, it's easy to say, let the newcomer do it. Screw the newcomer. You can do anything I don't want to do, but you're going to have to find your own job. They make big deals out of you being new in here. You say you're the most important people in this room. No, you're not. Next to me, you're the most important person in this room. That's the way it should be. It's the way it's always going to be. Because I need Alcoholics Anonymous more today than I've ever needed it before in my life. And the reason I need it more today than I've ever needed it before in my life is because I've had a good taste of the good life for a long, long time. You know, when I came out of a penitentiary, they wanted me to go to work. Do you imagine that? I mean, I used to look at the one ads. There ain't no one has one down there for old, wore-out hipsters. None. They don't have any. I read them every once in a while. I look at the one ad, and there's nobody wants any excellent domino players. Third table on the right down from the east block. I mean, just apply tomorrow. They don't run that one ad, but it's there. Nobody's looking for the star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates in 1953. I mean, they just ain't, try to put them on your resume sometime. My sponsor made me go to work. And I showed up to go to work. I'm going to prove it going to work. I was out in the oil field. I just went out there to get a job, and the guy asked me for my Social Security card. And I said, what? He said, your Social Security card, kid. Don't you have one? I said, no, I don't. He said, how old are you? I said, I'm 30. He says, you don't have a Social Security card? And I said, no. And he said, why not? And I said, I've never needed one. He said, where have you been all these years? I said, you wouldn't understand, mister, if I told you. He screwed up. He took me down and got me a Social Security card and put me to work. So I couldn't go back and tell my sponsor they weren't hiring ex-convicts. Took all my excuses. You know, they almost killed me out there in the oil field. I didn't know how to do nothing. I put the wrenches on backwards, screamed at them. They knocked me down. I got up. They finally put me way up 90 feet above the ground so I wouldn't hurt myself. So I used to stand over in the corner to watch what they did when they got paid. You know what they do when they get paid? They go home and get them kids and put them in baskets and run them up and down the aisles in markets and fill them full of groceries. I used to watch them do that. By the time I got my first paycheck, my wife had come back and she brought that little girl, so I went home and got her with that paycheck. I said, let's go to the market. She said, we don't need anything. I said, we're going to the market anyhow. She said, why? And I said, that's what they do when they get paid. And she said, who? And I said, them. I guess I had one of them spiritual serene looks about me, you know, like market or kill, you know. So she loaded the kid in the car and we went to the market. An hour later, I went to get some money from her to get a haircut and somebody stole her purse. Want to listen to somebody scream? You ought to hear a thief when they get stolen from. Well, I ranted and raved and jumped and hollered, and when I got all through, she poured me a cup of coffee. She says, you all through? And I says, yeah. She says, now you know how it feels. I went back to work that afternoon and got another paycheck, and I've been getting paychecks ever since. This is regular clockwork. I just go out there and do things I don't know how to do, and they give me money for it. It's crazy out there. They're just nuts. They pay me more money than I'm worth to do something I don't know how to do. I just walk in and help people get things done they don't know how to do. That's what I do all day. I go out there and make 12-step calls on my customers. They don't know that. I'm trying to help them get things done they don't know how to do. And they pay me good money for it. But I imagine what would happen if I'd walk into one of them Monday and say, you're going to have to up your order this week because I'm sensitive. I may drink if you don't do that. Pour me a drink. That's what he'd do. I bet he'd never pour the second one, I'll tell you. Turn his business into a gymnasium or something. That's but people really don't care. People don't care out there. And then people I deal with every day, they don't care whether I'm sober or not. They don't care at all. All they care about is whether I do the job or not. The only group of people who cares whether I'm sober or not are sitting in this room. That's all. This is the only people who really care whether you're sober or not. There's a lot of people. A lot of people who don't want us sober. They don't want us as drunk as we were. But they don't want us sober. You can't control an alcoholic when he's sober. I mean, he ain't coming from behind. He ain't got the hammer down and the heat on. He's not making up. Yeah. Weird thing going on in this meeting tonight. The sign that says court cards. I thought it was a cue card to tell some story or something. I've had a lot of things happen to me since I've been sober. And 5 or 6 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was very busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, and all hell seemed to break loose. Sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm expecting to be rewarded for receiving a gift. My gift is sobriety and a way of life. If I don't ever get anything else more than that, I've been way overpaid. Way overpaid. But you don't know that when you're crazy. I came through all that situation because my sponsor was there to pull me through them situations. That's what sponsors are good for. Sponsors are there. They're available. And they're available if you use them. And I had a great sponsor. I had the best sponsor who ever walked down the face there. I had it for 22 years. And he and I walked down the sunny side of the street together. We just walked and... I don't know, I just... It's amazing what old Norm used to do for me. He told me one time when I was getting ready to leave Alcoholics Anonymous that to remember that he gives big crosses to big hosses, he gives little crosses to guys named John. And I have never figured out what that meant yet. And that's been a long, long time ago. But I keep sticking around Alcoholics Anonymous hoping I'll find out what that means. And I've got some kind of an idea what it means. I don't know whether it's right or not. It means that I don't have any crosses. I'm sober. I'm sober. I've been sober for a long, long time. And although I've had a couple of cloudy days, that doesn't mean that the sun has never shined. That doesn't mean that at all. That means there's only been a couple of cloudy days in my life in 27 and some odd years. And the vast majority of the time that I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been skipping down the road of happy destiny like a loving little child, just happy and joyous and free. And then I have them pains of selfishness and self-centeredness, and I get to pay the price for it. I get wrapped up in selfishness and self-centeredness and selfish things. But that's not anything foreign to me because I am selfish, and I am self-centered, and I am into things. And the people of Alcoholics Anonymous have taught me how not to be. They've taught me to be more concerned about you than I am about myself. And they taught me that. They taught me that in sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me to sit around and sit still and not to talk and to pay attention in case I didn't care what was going on. Maybe the guy next to me wanted to. And see, I didn't know that that was just a self-centered situation when I sit around there and paid attention only to myself, did what I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it. I brought that attitude into Alcoholics Anonymous. I still have it. I still have a self-centered, selfish attitude. I still do a lot of things that I want to do. But somehow or other, I have learned from you to be more concerned about your problems from time to time than I am about my own. To be more willing to listen to you and to do what you ask me to do than to do what I want to do. When I did everything that I wanted to do, I ended up crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary barking at the moon. When I have been willing to do what you've asked me to do, I have lived 27 years and 8 months of glory, I'll tell you, in a life that I never dreamed existed, doing things I never think I would ever do. Really. And I don't know what else could happen to me. You know, I guess, you know, my daughter, my youngest daughter, the light of my life, got on drugs and I had to throw her out of the house. She got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, stayed sober for 9 months. Now she's out there doing a little controlled drinking, handling it. Seems to be doing well. I don't know. Not me to judge her. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I've been through a divorce. I've been through business failures. Watched people that I love die in Alcoholics Anonymous. And somehow through it all, I just have done what you've asked me to do. And I spent all day today, right up to this very instant, not wanting to be anybody else. Isn't that a fantastic statement? I didn't want to be anybody else today other than me. But you see, before I came to you, and for a long time after I was here, I didn't know who I was. I had built so many facades around me and hooked up to so many images that I didn't know who I was or what I was. And slowly but surely, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and my actions in it have whittled away at the images and got me down to the bare necessity and introduced me to a very strange person and introduced me to me. And when I was introduced to me, I didn't want to be anybody else. When I didn't know who I was and what I was, I wanted to be anything other than what I was. And now I'm just perfectly happy being me, doing what I do. It's amazing to me. It's just absolutely and totally fascinating to me what Alcoholics Anonymous has done in my life. And I haven't been anywhere else. The only thing that's been injected in my life in the last 28 years has been Alcoholics Anonymous. There hasn't been anything else. I don't go anywhere else, act anything else. It isn't anybody else's fault. I stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous because this program works. I know it works because it's worked in my life. It'll work in your life. But there's one thing I would like to beg of you if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you who aren't in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you who are hanging on to your differences, and you who are embellishing on that and taking pride in your differences by being Andas, just come on in here and be one among many. Quit being different. Just be something, whatever you are, whether this is it or whether this ain't it. Whatever it is, quit being a split personality. Just be one thing or the other. So you can't be two things at once and have any peace because you'll never know what you are. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't an alcoholic. I was a convict. And then I became a convict and a dope fiend. A convict and a dope fiend and a young person. A convict and a dope fiend and a young person and an alcoholic. And I've come to understand that the Andas were mine, were only divisions that would allow me to leave Alcoholics Anonymous any time I wanted to, because I didn't have to do the things that the alcoholics do to stay sober if I'm different. And if I would beg you of anything, I would beg that of you. Settle under the disease of alcoholism. It doesn't make any difference what you injected into your system. Quit being different. Be one among many. It's a fantastic situation. Not to be outstanding or being different or not being a part of or being different or standing aside. God, move on in for the first time in your life. Get in the room and be warm with the rest of the people. Quit standing outside watching everybody else get the goodies. This thing works. It works for me. It works for me. It'll work for you. It'll work for anybody who will apply it to their lives. But it is. The only thing you have to do is watch those images peel off of yourself and get introduced to yourself, get introduced to a human being. And then maybe one of these days, everything you possibly do will be like I possibly do. I'll try to show people how much I respect this thing that saved my life and gave me life. That's why I love Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous gave me everything that I have. It's taught me everything that I know. It makes me feel everything that I feel. It makes me believe everything that I believe. It's going to tell me that the best day of my life ain't even got here yet. I know that. Because every day of my life it gets better and better and better and better. And the reason my life gets better and better and better and better is because I become busier and busier and busier and busier in AA. I've come to understand that I have a progressive illness. My disease is progressive. It doesn't get any better. It gets worse, even during long and total periods of absence. My disease is getting worse. If my disease is getting worse, then my recovery should be more progressive. I should have to do more, not less, more. If my disease is worse now than it was when I got here, why shouldn't I have to do more? I do. I haven't retired in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm busier now than I've ever been. I sponsor more people, I go to more meetings, I do more of everything than I've ever done before. And I'm going to tell you, I wouldn't trade places with a single soul who walks upon the face of this earth. Life is good and life is beautiful. I guess I could stand here forever and ever and ever and thank Alcoholics Anonymous for the things that it's done for me. Because it's only Alcoholics Anonymous and God has expressed himself through you. And I want to tell you a little something I thought about in a meeting I was at the other night. I was in a meeting in San Diego, and a bunch of newcomers were getting up, and they were getting chips. And you know how they are, 30 days or 60 days. Or they're all full of God. You know, I mean, they're just so godly, they're just sick. And I mean, I want to thank God for this. Just me and God were walking hand in hand down the sunny side of the street. I'm going to tell you something. When it was just you and God, you and a lot of pucky. When it was just you and God, where were you? You see, I believe this. I believe that there's God within each and every soul in this room. There's a peace of God in each and every one of us. There's always been a peace of God in me. That was that peace in me that cried out when I was wrong and knew I was doing wrong, who wrenched my guts and drove me insane with guilt and remorse for doing the things I was doing. That's God in my life. It's God in your life. But it was until I could take that little piece of God of mine and infuse him with that little piece of God of yours, and we could infuse our little piece of God with theirs, that there was enough power in those little pieces to keep me sober. There's got to be. My little piece by itself won't do it. Your little piece by yourself won't do it. All of our little pieces meshed together creates a power by which all of us can stay sober. All of us. Together we can make it. By ourselves we're gone. Feel sorry for the poor fools who walk outside and conduct their own meetings, who are so interested in their own selves that they do not know that the power sits within this room with you. I know that. That's why I keep coming back to these meetings, because of myself and by myself, I do not have enough power to sustain me from the madness that lies within me, called selfishness and self-centered and a disease called alcoholism. So let's keep this thing together. Let's all unite as one and be as one and walk along this happy road of destiny, because we can have it. Some of us are going to fall off the road. Some of us are going to die in the ditches. But some of us are going to keep walking down the middle of the road too. And we're going to be sober as long as we stay together. So I could stand here and thank everything that I know about for the feelings that I have inside and the feeling I'm going to have. I would like to thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I really would. But I guess even more importantly than that tonight, what I'd really like to do is I'd like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for my God. Thank you.